This is the Mormon Expression Podcast. Find us on the web at mormonexpression.com.
Okay, welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson. Tonight, we're joined by a few of our regular panelists for another awe-inspiring discussion. First of all, we have Zilpha.
Hello.
And we have George.
Hi, everybody.
And we have Tom.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Tonight, we're joined by a guest who's going to kind of walk us through our topic. We have Glenn Ostlin. Glenn is a graduate of BYU, and he did a master's degree from Indiana University, in, folklore studies. He's a what did you say it was again?
It's folkloristics.
Folkloristics.
The Department of, folklore and ethnomusicology.
Wow.
But I think I'm a post folklorist.
Do you even dare put that on your resume? It seems like that might be, I have an undergraduate degree in linguistics, so I'm kind of in the same boat. Linguistics. What are you doing here? So it's hard to get a job sometimes.
Hopefully I don't have to worry about that resume too much. I've got a good job right now that's in a completely different industry and living in Tokyo. So I look back at the days in folklore with fondness, but it also seems like another lifetime ago, really.
Yeah, and like you said, Glenn's joining us this morning from Japan.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to talk about something that Glenn did some of his graduate work on, which is humor in the Mormon paradigm. Of course, like everybody, Mormons tell jokes, and most of them are lame, but we'll come back to that later. And so Glenn's going to help walk us through the discussion as we tell a few lame Mormon jokes and talk about Mormon humor. Well, first of all, Glenn, maybe you could start us out by what makes something, I guess it's what makes it, what makes something in the Mormon paradigm or in a culture funny? What is the soul of this sort of humor?
I don't know. That's a really good question. When I was researching it, it was different to different people. You know, there's a lot of theories out there of what makes something funny. One that I liked the best was a Thomas Hobbes quote that said that laughter is the sudden euphoria or the sudden glory that comes from a sudden realization of eminence or superiority over things. So sometimes if you see somebody like slip on a banana peel or, you know, run into a sign and you laugh, you might laugh because you're glad that's not you.
that's why I laugh.
There.
Yeah. Or I imagine that it's me and I'm so glad it's not. And it's just funny.
Yeah,
I heard somebody tongue-in-cheek once say that laughter evolved because it's the make something makes you smile and sad at the same time, and that comes out as a funny noise. So it's like a hybrid emotion. But, of course, any scientist can make anything fun seem lame.
Yeah, and I mean, that's exactly what happened with me when I was studying Mormon humor. You know, I got into it thinking this will be fun. You know, I had a friend that was teaching a humor course, and he would put The Simpsons and Seinfeld in his syllabus. And I thought that would be great, you know, if I could get on my resume that I have a doctoral degree in humor, then I can teach classes like this. But the more I studied it and got into to theories of why things are funny or looking at techniques, what makes it funny, it made humor a lot less funny.
Now, you were telling me as part of your research, you actually constructed a survey and asked Mormons about particular humorous things. Is that right?
Yeah, I collected jokes randomly from the internet, a lot of them. Some were stories that I had been told from people at church, and some were experience that I'd witnessed. But I wanted to get groups of Mormons together and ask them if they thought they were funny, and if they thought they were funny, why did they think they were funny? Or if they weren't funny, were they offensive? You know, and just try to capture their response to it. I don't know if that was really the most effective approach, getting into humor. But, you know, in preparation for our discussion tonight, I went back and listened to some of those tapes. You know, I did this 7 or 8 years ago, and it was really interesting, actually, to hear the different perspectives from, you know, you'd have somebody who was, you know, true believing Mormon, what they would think, you know, a guy who had been a bishop, a stake president, had served several missions with his wife. And, you know, his response to jokes was very different than somebody in their early 20s who, you know, came from a partially active family, you know, and had different backgrounds, or someone that I had interviewed that had been inactive for a while and had come back to the church. And she thought things were funny for different reasons. So I could read the same joke to these people and get different responses from it. It was kind of interesting.
So could you give us a few examples of ones that stick out from that survey that illustrate those different portions?
Yeah, there was one joke that, you've got a bishopric that goes hunting, and they're sitting around a campfire, and the bishop reaches into his backpack and, you know, pulls out a cup of coffee and says, "Guys, I'm sorry. When I get out here, I've got one vice. I've just got to enjoy coffee." And the first counselor reaches into his backpack and says, "Don't worry, Bishop. You know, when I come out here, I've got to drink a cold beer." And the second counselor reaches into his backpack and says, "Yeah, guys, when I come out here, I've got to enjoy a nice cigar." And then they're all looking at the executive secretary, waiting for him to say something. And finally, he says, "Yeah, guys, I admit it. I've got a vice, too. I'm a really big gossip. And I can't wait to get back to the ward and tell everybody what you guys just said." And so I would read this joke, and they laughed. You know, when I read this to the guy who had been, you know, stake president, served many missions, he laughed. And then I asked him, "So how would you rate this? Would you say this is very funny, moderately funny, not funny, or offensive?" And he goes, "Ha, ha, ha. Oh, yeah, that's not funny."
He didn't want me to go on record as saying it's funny, even though.
No, and it was so interesting to me because he had clearly laughed. But then he said it was not funny. And so I asked him, "Why is it not funny?" And he said, "Well, you know, I've been a bishop, and I've worked with people. They're good people. And maybe they have some vices, but I don't think those should be mocked and ridiculed. In fact, can I change my answer? I think this is offensive." You know. So
so he changed it to offensive, huh?
Yeah, he switched it to offensive.
Wow.
There was another joke that was kind of interesting to me. I don't think it's a very funny joke at all. I don't really get it. A guy dies. He goes to heaven. He sees St. Peter. St. Peter's touring him around, and he takes him to the edge of a cliff, and he says, "You know, if you look over the cliff, you'll see down into hell, but I would advise that you not look down." And the guy can't help himself. He looks over the cliff, and he sees these beautiful green valleys, and, you know, it's all growing. It's lovely, and he says to Peter, "This looks great down here." And Peter takes a look over, and he goes, "Oh, damn it, those Mormons have been irrigating again."
And
perfect response. That's how I feel about it.
So how did other people?
Yeah, so when I would ask what their response was, there was one guy who said he really liked that joke because of the – he had – ancestors who were pioneers, and you know, he imagined how difficult it was when the pioneers came out to Salt Lake and they were able to irrigate and turn it into this you know, beautiful paradise. So he really identified with the joke and he liked it. His wife, who had been inactive for several years while she was in college, she liked it because the Mormons were in hell. And, you know, her husband hadn't even thought of that angle. You know, somebody else liked it because they thought it was funny that St. Peter would say damn. There are just different reasons that, you know, people would look at this joke and think that it was funny or wasn't funny. And it all tied back to their own sense of identity, their own sense of values. And I found that very interesting as I was researching it. But, you know, obviously I stopped writing the dissertation halfway through. It became a little cumbersome to write about it and try and make it seem, I don't know, more important maybe than it really is. But it's an interesting topic.
Definitely. Now you hit on something in that joke that I had taken a little note of. And I'm going to go back to my father. Now, I have to apologize to everybody listening to this thing. I am the worst joke teller who ever roamed the face of this earth. So I apologize in advance. But there's an old joke that my dad used to say, and it was a Jay Golden Kimball one. And that's a topic for a whole nother day. But, you know, the Jay Golden liked to use a little bit of the foul language from time to time. And from my father's telling of the joke, he was asked, you know, why don't the brethren get after you for swearing in conference? And the answer is, well, I repent too damn fast. Now, the reason that was funny is my dad never swore, right? But he would tell this joke all, I mean, I must have heard him tell it 30 times in my lifetime, the I repent too damn fast punchline. So I think there was like this license for him in telling the joke to breach sort of a cultural norm.
And that's part of what made it funny.
That's part of what made it funny.
Because
my dad saying.
Yeah.
And that's one of the first points that I have. You know, if you watch Comedy Central or whatever, it doesn't take too long till you figure out the humor is largely about shock, about saying something that's outside the normal or unexpected or ironic in that way. So Mormons are at a huge disadvantage here, and this kind of shadowed in the jokes you were talking about, because you can't be a good Mormon and be too shocking, or the stake president might tell you that, you know, it's inappropriate to joke about the brethren like that. And of course, the cloud over all of that is, you know, in the temple, the Mormons are told to avoid loud laughter. And that's something that has bled over into the culture outside the temple. So, but you know, there's this thing that whatever loud laughter is, you're not supposed to do it.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned the unexpected, and, when you first asked me, you know, what is funny? What makes humor? I talked about superiority theory, but there's another theory of humor called the incongruity theory that's based on this idea of what's expected. You know, you get something in humor that's different from what you expected, so you've got an incongruity. And that's a space that it makes it really interesting to study humor, you know, because you can learn what people's expectations are, and that helps them or helps you understand how they define their identity. So you've got these prescriptions against humor, like you mentioned in the temple, and there's a couple of passages in the Doctrine and Covenants that also say, you know, avoid light-mindedness and loud laughter. And, you know, my experience in Mormonism hasn't, I mean, there's people that are really serious and really staunch, but I've always been around people that have a pretty good sense of humor. The jokes, like you mentioned, can be pretty lame, but some of the things that actually happen in church can be very funny. And it comes on your own perspective where you're coming from. But if I can give an example of that just from yesterday in our ward here in Tokyo, and I should probably preface this by saying that you know, I'm one of those guys, maybe a little bit like Tom, if I understand from Tom right, that you go to church and you don't always agree with everything that people says. And sometimes you have that experience where there's the, you know, nails scratching against the chalkboard thing that you hear people say. But every once in a while you hear something that's so ridiculous that it's funny, and it almost makes it easier to cope with. So yesterday there was a guy that got up to bear his testimony, and he was talking about an experience he had over the weekend with the Boy Scouts, where they, for an Eagle Scout project, they went and cleaned out a shack that was in the backside of a school, I think it was. But he decided to make a point about this, and he said, you know, I think that we all have a backside, and we all need to clean out our backsides regularly, and we need to buff them. We need to power wash them and scrub them. And, you know, we shouldn't neglect our front sides either, but our backsides are really important. And he had no idea. you know, how ridiculous this was that he was saying.
He was selling enema products.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
But I think that's absolutely true. You know, some people out who don't have any contact with Mormons sometimes confuse them with like a sort of dour Amish looking person. But I think you're right on that as a culture, Mormons tend to be rather open and rather friendly and
lighthearted.
They joke around and lighthearted.
Yeah, I think it's the temple thing. They always combine it with the sentence that comes right after that about, you know, not speaking about the leaders in a mean or joking way. Do you think that's kind of more how they take the thing in the temple?
Yeah, and I would point back to that example that I gave of the former stake president, you know, and his response to the joke. The more he analyzed this joke about the bishop and his counselors, the closer he got to, oh, maybe this is evil speaking. Mm-hmm. You know.
So I've always found that Mormons on general, and I've always been proud about this, but I don't know if we're different than any other group, tend to like a good joke about ourselves, and we pride ourselves in the fact that we can see humor in our daily lives. Is that go along with what you found, or does it only humorous up to that certain aspect where they can take offense in it?
Well, I think that's, you know, exactly right. That there is this, you know, sense of it, that it's healthy to be able to laugh about yourself and not take yourself too seriously. I heard people say that a lot, but what was interesting to me is the line about what you can joke about and who you can joke about. I think it's defined more by the group and the audience than really the content in some situations where, If you're telling a joke about polygamy to Mormons, it's okay. You can kind of laugh about it. But when non-Mormons are the audience, it becomes offensive. And if you look at what was that movie, the Singles Ward that came out, that was something that really struck me as odd with that movie. That here's a comedy that its bread and butter is humor. And a lot of the jokes were kind of just, you know, stupid nerd jokes, but there were some legitimate Mormon jokes in there as well. You know, that speak to the culture, you know, when he has the people in the ward coming to reactivate him and bringing him casseroles or whatever that was, you know, that I would say that that's Mormon humor because it's from the Mormon experience. But you've got this movie that takes its bread and butter making Mormon jokes. But the conflict of the movie is that he's a comedian who's telling Mormon jokes to non-Mormons in a comedy club. And this, you know, girlfriend that he has, she decides, you know, I can't be with this guy because he's telling jokes to non-Mormons about Mormons. So it seemed really strange to me that it kind of wanted to have its cake and eat it too, you know, to use a proverb I've never understood.
Well, I know this came up recently in our family. One of the boards I frequent, I guess there was a new little statue from Mormonhood put out, and it's basically a statue of Joseph and Emma, and then it says "True Love" down on the tagline. And somebody, what they'd done is they'd taken the Emma and photoshopped it, so there was like 10 or 15 Emmas standing right next to her. And Oh my gosh, my wife and I laughed about that. As we were falling asleep, you know, 6 hours, 7 hours later after I showed it to her, I caught her chuckling in bed and I said, "You're laughing about that statue again, aren't you?" We were just busting up about that thing. But then at the same time, I agree, if that got shown on a billboard somewhere or something like that, there would probably be all this, "Oh, look at how they're mocking Joseph Smith," you know. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's the audience. It's the people who would understand it and find humor of it. And it probably makes a big difference of where you find your offense.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I did early on in folk, I had a website that was dedicated to missionary folklore and Mormon folklore. And this was probably from 97 until maybe 2000, 2001. And one of the comments that I would get back from, you know, criticism, was that I was airing dirty laundry for the church. You know, that there were some stories that they were good. They should be talked about, but it wasn't for everyone. And so I think when you have an audience that's non-Mormon, Mormons tend to be a little more skittish than they would if it's just themselves. And I think you see that in the humor as well.
Well, and we were talking sort of about appropriateness. I noticed in my online research to find jokes and to look at it for preparing for tonight that there seemed to be some things that were clearly off limits. So there are a lot of jokes dealing with Mormon culture, a lot of jokes dealing with missionaries, you know, making fun of the elders or the Relief Society or whatever. But I never found one that was making fun of a general authority. So that Mormon, you know, or I couldn't find very many that dealt with doctrine. Now, I compare that. I also looked at a lot of Catholic jokes and some Baptist jokes. And some of the other faiths were a little bit willing to poke fun at their own theology a little bit more than I could find with Mormons. Now, that's not to say there aren't those jokes out there, but I had a rougher time finding them.
Yeah, I can think of a couple that I came across. This one's always puzzled me, where, and I'm trying to remember exactly how it goes, but it's something like, I've got good news and I've got bad news. Or I think maybe the secretary for President Hinckley, you know, back when he was the prophet, walks in and says, President Hinckley, I've got good news and bad news. Christ has called the second coming. That's the good news. The bad news is he's called the Vatican.
Yeah,
something like that. Does that sound familiar to you?
Here's the way I always heard the joke. The Pope's secretary comes into him and says, I've got good news and bad news. And he says, oh, what is it? She says, you know, Jesus is on the line. And he says, oh, great. What's the bad news? And then she says, well, he's calling from Salt Lake City.
Right.
That's what I always heard.
And that one, I understand, because it's in that superiority theory. It's saying, right. You know, about the Mormons are superior than the Catholics. But when I've heard that told the opposite way, it's really puzzled me. I haven't understood why a Mormon would be telling that joke to another Mormon. And there are some examples of that. There's another one with somebody dying, going to heaven, and they're being showed the different areas and saying, oh, this is where the Lutherans are, the Catholics are, and now we're going to be coming over a hill, and I need you to be very quiet because this is where the Mormons are, and they think that they're the only ones here.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's more.
And that was pretty critical.
Yeah, that's more kind of poking fun of ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, but it's, I've heard that one all my life, and there's some really interesting aspects to it. First of all, it's safe because it says, well, you know, Mormons are in heaven. You know, I have oftentimes heard it said they're behind a wall or, you know, they're in their own little section. But it points to that sort of universalism that I think is common in our culture today, where I think a lot of Mormons are uneasy with, they believe their own religion and they believe they have a true church, but they're uneasy with that, you know, everybody else is going to hell. This is the only true church thing. And this kind of gets around that universalism.
Yeah. I should have had you write my dissertation for me, John.
I'm just repeating back what you're already saying. We talked about superiority, and there's quite a few of those mixed with a little bit of deprecation. I want to kind of move over and talk about the deprecation a little bit. And I actually found one joke that I really liked. And this one said, you know, a Catholic priest went into a barber shop for a haircut. And when he's finished, the barber refused payment and said, you know, you're a man of the cloth. This is free. And I'm just going to give it to you. And the priest thanked him and went on his way. And the next morning, the barber found seven fishes and seven loaves outside his doorstep as a gift of gratitude from the priest. And then the next week, a Jewish rabbi came in and asked for a haircut. And again, the barber gave it to him and refused payment. And says, this is a free service I offer to you in service to the Lord. And the next morning, the barber found a nice gift from the rabbi on his doorstep. And then the next week, two missionaries came into the shop for haircuts. And again, the barber said, you know, you guys are out serving God, so I refuse payment. And so the next morning, the barber came and found 12 missionaries at his doorstep waiting for haircuts. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, there are some self-deprecating ones, and everybody who's, you know, been around missionaries, of course, sort of gets that one. And like I said before, yeah. You know, missionaries are a common target, probably deserving of so.
And from what I understood, and this comes from, you know, secondhand to secondhand, so I don't know if it's actual true story, but It always starts out, and this is a true story. So this woman sitting next to her sister in sacrament meeting, and it's sacrament time, and the deacon passes the bread tray around, and it comes up to him, and the woman that's sitting next to her sister reaches into the bread tray, grabs a piece of bread that's kind of on the bottom, and starts to pull it up, and sure enough, the piece of bread is about half the size of her palm. And she's up real awkward, and she looks around, and she feels everybody staring at her, and she's like, oh, what do I do? Do I keep it? Do I put it back? That's not good. And so she keeps it, and she leans over to her sister and says, would you happen to have any ham and mayo with you? And of course, they start laughing, and then half the pew starts laughing, and then there's a bunch of awkward stares and blah, blah, blah. So
that could possibly be true. It would be pretty sacrilegious, though. You're right.
That sounds like our family in sacrament meeting any given week. We'll find something funny that's said, and we'll start cracking up about it. So,
well, and in our ward, just a couple of weeks ago, well, maybe it was more like a couple of months ago, they ran out of bread, and at the last minute, they had to run and get some, and it ended up being some of that sourdough bread that was really, really hard. Mm. And so everybody was chewing the bread way after the water was come and gone. So,
but, you know, speaking of sacrament meeting, it is really, really common for, you know, as all the lay members get up to give their talks, to start with a joke. I mean, I would guess a good half of them start that way.
Yeah. And the visiting authorities, what are they called?
The high councilmen?
Yeah, the high councilmen. They usually start with a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of gone away. I think there's been a lot of discouragement from doing that.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't, maybe well, just the West Coast. As far as I know that, what's that?
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the reason why it's dying away is because the jokes have never been really any good.
Could be.
Kind of one of those wah-wah-wah moments, you know.
So speaking of the jokes that make fun of Mormon culture, I found a really common theme out there were the light bulb jokes.
Oh, yes.
So, of course, how many Relief Society sisters does it take to screw in a light bulb?
It's one and then five to bring refreshments or something like that.
Yeah, one to fix refreshments and one to bring the tablecloth and one to design the centerpiece and one to screw in the light bulb.
Okay. See, that one's funny to me.
How many members of the bishopric does it take to screw in a light bulb? None.
They delegate it out or something?
They don't do it. They call a priesthood executive council and assign it to the elders.
Yeah.
All right. How many elders does it take to screw in a light bulb? The answer is four. It's three to not show up and one to bring and do the light bulb.
That's right.
How many high priests does it take? The answer is four. Two to push the wheelchairs, one to handle the oxygen tank, and one to screw in the light bulb. Hey, you guys are both high priests, aren't you?
Yes.
I'll say the last one. Okay, so how many home teachers does it take?
Probably take the whole ward because the home teachers never showed up.
Well, actually, it only takes two, but you have to wait until the end of the month.
That reminds me of another home teacher joke. So two guys are talking about their home teachers, and one says, "Yeah, hey, I have pretty good home teachers, because they always come on the first day of the month." The other says, "Well, mine are better than that. They always come one day before that."
Yeah, I've been there, done that. We've heard that one a couple times.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about Utah humor. I found a lot of jokes looking through the Mormon stuff was really aimed at Utah. Now, there seems to be that inside and outside thing, kind of, Glenn, that you were hinting at before. The Utah people kind of poke fun at themselves a little bit, but there seems to be a trend for people outside of the Holy State there to be a little bit more vicious in their Utah jokes.
Yeah, I can't think of any examples of that off the top of my head, but I'd agree with you.
Well, then you could get into the Utah BYU jokes, too.
Yes, there's a lot of BYU jokes. There's a lot that are around making fun of Utah accent.
Like what?
Well, my dad used to call it a crick.
Oh, a crick.
I've heard cricks used for years.
And the toilet? Have you ever heard the toilet?
The toilet. I've not heard the toilet before, but I believe it. That's anybody from Lehigh and North.
Oh, yeah?
Say Turlet, yeah.
Turlet?
I always hear Hurricane or Hurricane.
Well, it's Hurricane, of course.
Hurricane.
For the city, right?
Yeah.
Did you all grow up in Utah?
I did.
Yeah. I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't either. Yeah, but I think my favorite Utah joke was that there's a sign when you're driving into the state that says, now entering Utah, set clock back 100 years.
Yeah.
Well, that was always the joke when I was growing up, because if you wanted to see what the fashions were in Utah, you just looked at what they were in California 5 years earlier.
Which is true.
That's probably still true.
Yeah.
So one of my funny, this actually happened to my sister. They're in Sacrament Meeting, and their 2-year-old little boy is acting up in Sacrament Meeting and starts screaming and causing a ruckus. And she grabs him and whips him up and starts taking him out, and he starts screaming louder. And then he starts screaming at the top of his lungs, "Bishop, save me!
Oh, hey,
Bishop,
yeah.
Save me!" And everybody made a scene.
I've heard that attributed to lots of people.
Yeah,
though.
Me too. Yeah, my family said it happened in their own ward.
Are you sure, Tom, that happened to your sister?
That's what she told me. That, so maybe she's making it up.
But. Where did they live? Because that happened to my family too.
It probably happens to a lot of people. I don't know.
Well, they live in American Fork.
I'm sorry, talking over you, Zola.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering where your sister lived, for real.
In the up in Salt Lake in the avenues.
Huh. That is odd, isn't it? Because my family told me that happened. They told me even the child's name.
It probably has happened to multiple people.
You know, yeah, it's one of those phenomena with folklore that the person who tells you about it kind of gets confused for the person that it happened to. And that's a pretty common thing. When you go back and actually start trying to trace back the origins of stories, you'll have people say, you know, like you did, Tom, oh, this actually happened to my sister. If we went and talked to your sister, she would probably say, well, no, it didn't actually happen to us, but it happened to somebody that we know.
It's very likely. It's very likely.
Although, yeah. I've got to tell you, Tom, when Gladys Knight joined the church, and my mother-in-law called me up and said, did you hear that Gladys Knight joined the church? I went, oh, yeah. So does Steve Martin. So, you know, all these other celebrities that are – I was all skeptical, and, you know, she proved me wrong. So it's possible.
Okay, how about this folklore story? And you can tell me whether you guys have heard this one or not. So this new member of the church, he's in his 20s. He's a single male. He converts over, but he's kind of a flamboyant kind of a guy. And so he gets into the church. Of course, he's a play guy. He goes to plays. He's an actor. And so that's, you know, that's kind of reminiscent of his flamboyancy, I guess. Well, he converts in, and of course he plays the piano and the organ. So the first calling he gets is to become the organ player for Sacrament Meeting. And so a couple of weeks later, it's Halloween, and he's not exactly toned down on the flamboyancy, and he shows up in this big cape with his white shirt and tie, but he's got this big black cape on, and he goes up to the organ, and the prelude music before the sacrament actually starts, he starts playing the Phantom of the Opera.
I think I know this guy.
Really?
No.
And so he's playing this dun 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 dun, and the bishopric and everybody in the ward's too uncomfortable to actually say anything, like, hey, that's not appropriate, blah blah blah. So he does his thing, and right when the bishop gets up and kind of looks at him, okay, enough's enough, and he stands up and he bows, and then he does the big twirl with the clay cape.
And the That's wow. supposed to have really happened, huh?
That's supposed to have really happened. And to me, I don't really care, because I think it's a great story.
Yeah, it's a great story. I had a guy in my ward who moved because they wouldn't let him play that kind of music at church and get really, really big. And they came down on him, so he moved out and moved to Utah, where he thought they'd have a little bit more ability to do stuff like that. So I could see that.
Okay, so... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that there was an organist in my ward who would play that music. You know, I remember it for postlude music at the end of the sacrament meeting, we'd get this, and it was the most bizarre thing I ever heard, but it was fantastic.
Yeah. All right. So, of course, the big target of humor is the biggest target is the cultural strangeness. So I wanted to investigate some of that a little bit. And probably the basic form of delivery is those "you might be a Mormon if" sort of things. And it's interesting to see kind of where they group up, where they sort of conglomerate. And the ones, of course, that I find funny and not. Now, I might find them funny. I'm, of course, a cultural Mormon. I grew up there, and maybe I'm a little bit more mean-spirited now in my humor. Since I don't go to church anymore, I don't know. And I find a lot of these try to make fun of the church in a loving sort of way. So, or a superiority. We were talking about that early. So here's an example of a superiority one. "You might be a Mormon if all of your dishes have masking tape on the bottom of them." Now, you don't.
No, I don't get it.
You don't get it?
No.
What?
You might be a Mormon if all of your casserole dishes have masking tape on
the
bottom.
Oh. A label.
Because you write your names on them. Because you're so generous that you're constantly giving your casserole dishes to other people, and then it has your name written on it.
Okay.
I get it.
I didn't say it was a good joke. I said it was common. "You might be a Mormon if you've ever used the phrase 'with every fiber of my being.'"
Yeah.
Now, of course, we've mentioned before that we go to the Unitarian Church, kind of, and, I've never been enough to figure out if there's any sort of phrases that Unitarians use all the time, but there's a whole bunch of them. I was about to say there's a whole host of them, but there's a whole bunch of them that Mormons use, and those show up in the humor a lot. For example, it says, "You might be a Mormon if you ever blessed cake or cookies or donuts, saying, 'Please bless this food that will nourish and strengthen our bodies.'"
It's those phrases I can't figure sometimes how they get pervasive, no matter where you live. They have moved around, and probably they are either even in different languages and stuff like that by now.
Are they? Are they in Japan?
I don't know.
Do they say "bless the food to nourish and strengthen our bodies"?
I don't think the Japanese don't, but the Japanese do have. I mean, we're going back years ago that I would pray in Japanese, but I do remember there were set phrases. But I don't remember what they were. And I don't know how they correspond to nourish and strengthen our bodies.
Huh. Do you hear that with the fiber of my every being or whatever
with
that
every
is?
Every fiber of my being.
I know my roommate is true.
Well, that's another one that there's some jokes making fun of is the word companion. You know, that Mormons will use the word companion to refer to a friend or left over from missionary time.
I've never heard him referred to a friend, but
there's
a lot of the way that we use language that is just kind of a Mormon way of using language. And when you use it outside of a Mormon context, people look at you a little strange. I remember we had some friends were not Mormon over to the house, and they brought some coffee with them. And he asked my wife if she wanted to drink a coffee. And she said, "Oh, no, we don't believe in coffee." And he looked at her a little strange, and he kind of held it up to her face. And he said, "It's right here."
That's great.
Yeah, it just made me think. No, we don't think about what we're saying. We just say it.
When I was in Utah and I worked at a company there, I have to admit it was a hobby of mine to try to drop little Mormon turns of phrases, especially when we were doing presentations out on the road. So if I could pull a little phrase from, say, the temple and drop it into a presentation, see, then I could make the other people with me laugh and no one else would get it.
I've done that a lot.
Yeah, I'm not the only one, but I still do that from time to time where I work now, but the satisfaction has lost because I throw in a Mormon phrase and no one gets it but me, so I have to just laugh to myself.
I'll regularly try and slip in, you know, or something like that.
Oh. I might have to cut that one. So I saw a lot of, speaking of Mormon themes, a lot of jokes dealing with the word of wisdom. Of course, we just talked about the coffee and kind of the silliness there. You know, when you might be a Mormon if you're 300 pounds and don't drink Diet Coke because it's unhealthy.
That's a good one.
Those are good. I always like hearing those. Because those are the ones that really do throw our things back at us a little bit, and they there's that ring of truth.
It shows us the irony in certain beliefs.
Yeah, yeah. Those are the ones that are always kind of fun.
Now, one of the last things I want to explore with you guys, and actually Glenn brought it up a little bit earlier, but I want to return to it, and that is the sort of official outlets of Mormon comedy and Mormon jokes and that. And Glenn, you were talking about the Singles Ward, and you're talking about how they explored that comedy thing. I actually found that part of the show a little bit intriguing. I mean, I'm assuming they didn't just stumble on it. The fact that they were exploring Mormon humor from both sides, that like you said, when the comedian was telling jokes to the outside, in the end, he perceives that that's sort of a bad thing to do, even though the whole movie is about that humor. So it's that movie is really about that border keeping of what's appropriate inside and outside. So we can talk about that a little bit. You kind of already did. But the other thing I wanted to really get your all opinion on is how the Mormon joke engine, the movies just sort of died. It's like they ran their course. You know, by the time the home teacher came around, it was much more shticky and not nearly as funny. And they just don't make these movies anymore. Is it real? When I compare it to, say, I don't know, there's more Mormons in the United States than there are Jews. But there seems to be a never-ending wealth of Jewish humor and Jewish cinema and Jewish art. Why did we run our run so quickly? Why did we run out of material?
Well, have you seen the movies? They suck.
Good point.
Is it less funding?
Do they suck because they suck, or do they suck because of the material they're working with?
It was probably some of both. But
in the Jewish humor, I mean, and maybe it's cultural Judaism, too, I don't. But they're not so concerned about putting an image of one true church and being an example and doing missionary work for everyone. So I think that's a big hindrance in Mormon culture. If you're going to do some kind of Mormon art and you're going to be honest about it, you can't cover up all of the warts.
Mm-hmm. And that's what.
So I think you look at something like Big Love, which it isn't. You know, the HBO series Big Love, which isn't part of, you know, official or mainstream Mormon culture, but I think it's a excellent example of, you know, Mormonism getting into that mainstream medium in a much better way than any of these Mormon-made movies ever did. And maybe we'll start seeing more of that, but I think
there's
still that
funny.
Protective... What's that?
I said it, but it's not funny, Big Love.
Well, I think there's
some great funny in it.
You know, for me, when I watch Big Love, the funniest thing is not the polygamists. It's all the regular Mormons that get portrayed in the show. That's the best part. The lawyers who show up and her little friend who works at the burger joint with her. Right. All the little turns of phrases that they have the regular Mormons say. That's the best part of the show. But I've seen, like, on the boards and online and comment sections, that's the section that the Mormons take the most offense at. The way that they portray mainstream Mormons is really, I think back to last season where they had the barbecue out in the street with all the members and their neighbors who are all supposed to be members and how they behave. And I think sometimes they get it off, but sometimes they get it spot on. But a lot of Mormons find it offensive to even portray a Mormon in anything but a golden light.
Right. Yeah. I agree.
I don't know. I think it's pretty subtle, though. I mean, you know.
Now, that reminds me of one other thing I'd written down here in notes that I thought was really peculiar. Now, Zilpha, this is your mom. You know, Zilpha's mom is pretty straight-laced Mormon, but she actually sent me the clip from the South Park movie. Now, for those who haven't seen the South Park movie, there's a section where everybody's standing in hell.
Hello, newcomers, and welcome. Can everybody hear me? Hello? Can everybody, okay. I'm the hell director. It looks like we have about 8,615 of you newbies today. And for those of you who were a little confused, you are dead and this is hell. So abandon all hope and yada, yada, yada. We're now going to start the orientation process, which will last about...
Hey, wait a minute. I shouldn't be here. I was a totally strict and devout Protestant. I thought we went to heaven.
Yes, well, I'm afraid you were wrong.
I was a practicing Jehovah's Witness.
You picked the wrong religion as well.
Well, who was right? Who gets into heaven?
I'm afraid it was the Mormons. Yes, the Mormons were the correct answer.
It's one of those superiority things.
Yeah, and it's in a, for the outsiders, you know, the South Park guys are obviously not in love with the Mormons, but it's something that I had a really true believing Mormon send me in an email, and they thought it was really a confirming thing, you know.
Yeah, instead of poking fun at the Mormons for thinking that they're the only ones that made it, she really thought it was confirming, like you said.
And you know, later in one of their South Park episodes where they have the whole Joseph Smith putting his face in the hat thing, you know, that's kind of a litmus test to see how liberal you are, because liberal Mormons find that funny, even ones who are believing, but more conservative ones don't find it funny at all.
Yeah, I thought it was funny.
It was really funny.
Yeah, that was an awesome. I think we all want to claim it now. And who would come out on this podcast to say, no, I didn't find it funny?
Oh, so Glenn, do you have any other favorite jokes that you came across during your research?
Oh, there's and I like this one. Why do Mormon women stop having babies at 35? Because 36 is too many.
And that reminds me of the old lame one, which was too lame to even say, but I'll do it anyway. You know, how do you tell you're at a Mormon wedding?
Oh, the mother and the pregnant.
Yeah, the bride's not pregnant, but her mother is. Yeah.
Jeez.
Once again, that's a lot of them have the superiority thread as opposed to the deprecation, and I think we summed up why that is. So I think the bottom line here, to wrap things up, is I think Mormons are, you know, people who can take themselves lightly, but only to a point. You know, there's like some real boundaries there that you're not allowed to cross. Of course, we've tried to cross as many of them as we can tonight. Does anybody have a general authority joke so we can cross them all?
Do they exist?
And I have to give a wag of my finger in Stephen Colbert style to my to all my ex-Mormon friends out there. I looked at your humor pages, and a lot of the stuff is just too mean to be on this podcast. You know, the ex-Mormon humor needs to step it up, and a lot of it was just, I don't know, sort of vicious.
You're looking for more sophistication?
Yeah, a little bit more sophistication in your humor.
I know I don't have it offhand. Maybe we could get it and stick it in somehow. But there was one that came out recently where a talk or a subject is given and taken by each one of the general authorities. And it ends up poking some fun at them because, you know, Thomas Monson comes out and says, you know, hearts were true. A widow was, his heart was gladdened. These were shared and everybody, you know, and so it just took their individual styles. I don't know if we could really quickly grab that one, but that in my mind goes after some GA humor.
But yeah, that's true that there is some humor around how they speak, their right. Idiosyncrasies.
Yeah. But I've seen that mostly from, you know, the ex-Mormons as opposed to inside. Yeah.
No, this was actually like at Mormon Times or somewhere like that. I mean, it was definitely a pro.
I don't think it's for Mormon Times. Maybe I'm wrong in that one.
There was a professor that I had at BYU in the English department. I don't remember his name now, but he would do impersonations in class, and he would do President Kimball, and he would do Thomas S. Monson, and you know, he had that whole conference speak thing down, and he would get us rolling. That was great when they do that.
Yeah, I doubt he'd commit that to tape. But, you know, this probably reminds me of, you know, what was it, five or six years ago now, maybe not that long, when L. Tom Perry was talking up to the state conference in Idaho, in which he gave a sort of a talk when he talked about all the brethren eat chocolates in order. And, you know, he said some stuff that for a lot of people when they read it, it went all over the Mormon world in email, and then the church issued a statement saying, stop sending that email. But I think one thing that that did is it portrayed the Brethren in a very like human sort of light. It made them seem more like regular people, but they squashed it pretty quick.
That was the Kit Kat joke, right? It was how do they eat a Kit Kat?
I thought it was a box of chocolates.
Well, I've seen that one, but this one, he was just saying that when they do everything in order, and when they eat a box of chocolates, they pass it to the first guys, and he kind of grumbled that Packer always gets the best choice because he's first in line, and then if you're down at the bottom of the line of the 12, it made them seem a little petty, like they all were all like worried about this legalistic thing. He talked about how they all came in the room in order and left the room in order and that sort of thing.
Well, you know, I think that the interesting thing, if I were still doing this, I'd be really interested to see how people use humor as a way to broach topics that are taboo topics. And you know, because you do have people that are still active in the church that, you know, are like the New Order Mormons or they're more liberal Mormons, and they have to find a space where they can comment on things. I wouldn't be surprised that humor is one of those spaces or that humor creates that space where you can make commentaries and be a little bit critical, but then back up and say, oh, come on, I'm just kidding. It's just a joke.
You know, I'm kind of glad you brought that up because, you know, I was just a minute ago making fun of my ex-Mormon brethren, but that sort of using humor to, for ex-Mormons, to break the sacred becomes a very important thing in their step out. And, you know, you can go over to like the Salamander Society as a website, for example, where there's a real purpose there. And humor is used by ex-Mormons to sort of throw off their I don't want to say mental chains,
Shackles. But
they get stuck in this idea of what's right and what's wrong and being forced between the worlds, and using humor helps them reframe those sort of things. So in the barest sense, you know, if they can take somebody they held to be very venerable, like the Brethren, and then they can use the most sort of despicable comedy at their expense, that helps them reset and reframe.
Yeah. And isn't that interesting that, you know, you've got this thing that we're calling humor as if it's one thing that can be used by Mormons for Mormons to kind of pat yourself on the back and create a really strong sense of identity. But then you've got ex-Mormons that can use this thing we're calling humor as a way of creating distance and, you know, stripping away these things that were sacred and, you know, taking them out of the sacred and putting them into the profane. That's what interested me about humor all those years ago.
Definitely interesting, but probably a topic for another day to explore ex-Mormon humor.
Yeah.
All right, Glenn, thanks for coming on. It's been a fun time, and I laughed a little bit at some of the lame jokes.
Well, thanks for having me on. I enjoy your podcast and listen to them as much as I can.
Wonderful.
Love what you're doing.
Great. Well, like always, the discussion continues on the website. You can mosey over there and post and put up some more lame Mormon jokes, the ones we missed. You can send us an email at mail@mormonexpression.com, or you can call and leave a message at 801-906-6722.